with a positive preparation for disaster. This is Community Alert, keeping you informed about how to be prepared, not if, but when disaster strikes. Tuesdays at 11 a.m. and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at 1 p.m. on KZSB, AM 1290, Santa Barbara News Press Radio.
Welcome, folks, to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. And today we're visiting with Ron Coleman, the retired state fire marshal and acting chair, is it?
He's with the International Residential Code, the IRC, Fire Sprinkler Coalition. Right. Welcome to the show, Chief.
I'm glad to be here.
Just a couple of pieces of house cleaning here to do. Welcome back, Ted. We missed you last week.
Yeah,
and
I wanted to thank
Fire Chief Michael Dyer for taking so much time out to be with us. It was a great show. We had quite a bit of comments back on that. Next week, we've got the president of the California State Firefighters Association, Kevin Nida, coming in. We're going to be talking about some of the changes and what's going on in the fire service in general. California State Firefighters Association is the trade association for fire service in California. Been around quite a long time. And Ron's a member of that also. So,
all right.
Anyway, well, let's get into today's topics. Chief, I appreciate you taking time out to talk to us. We wanted to talk about residential sprinkler systems. That's become kind of a hot topic here in Santa Barbara. I also know that California is looking at doing this on a permanent basis statewide. So I thought I'd bring the spokesman for the Fire Sprinkler Coalition on the show, and let's talk about the facts of sprinklers.
Be happy to do so.
What are residential sprinkler systems? Let's start at the core issue. What are they, and why do we need them?
Okay, well, the first thing we ought to do is define what a residential fire protection system is. It consists of a combination of a connection to the water system, a piping system that distributes water supply throughout the structure, and a series of devices called sprinkler heads, which are installed in such a fashion that they protect individual rooms of a piece of property. And in the event that there is a fire in that particular dwelling, the sprinkler system, responding to the products of heat and energy, will discharge and control a fire, limiting it usually to the area of origin. Most people are familiar with sprinkler systems by seeing them in industrial environments, like if you go to a manufacturing plant or you're walking into a movie theater. Residential sprinkler systems is that same system technology, but reduced down to a more appropriate scale for single-family and multifamily dwellings.
Now, this is a sprinkler system that's only on the interior of the home. This is not including the exterior sprinkler systems that we look at in the wildland fire area. Is that correct?
The standard that we're talking about today has to do with protecting life and property on the interior of a building.
Interior, thanks.
Let's talk briefly, backing up slightly here, about the code enforcement. What does your organization actually do, and how does that relate to the building codes for the state of California?
Well, actually, our organization is not a state organization. It's an international organization. We represent a group of people who have joined together to attempt to amend codes at the national and international level to require sprinklers to be installed in a much broader fashion than they have been in the past. We recently led the charge to get an amendment made to the International Residential Code, which puts sprinklers into the document, which was voted on initially in Minneapolis, where we actually got it in the code, but then we had to re-vote the issue again in Baltimore just a couple of weeks ago because of some opposition that felt that we shouldn't put it in the code. My group is a coalition. Best way I'd describe it is we're sort of what, to the fire service, what NATO is to military. We collectively work with people who are advocates and people who are out there making things happen on the ground. And we primarily serve the purpose of trying to make sure that it's properly introduced into the code development process.
So you become an advisory to the State Board of Fire Services and the California Fire Service as a whole as it relates to building codes?
Well, remember what I just said a minute ago. It's we function at the national level, and we support all of the states. We started here in California, literally. My background includes I started putting in residential fire sprinklers clear back in 1976 in the city of San Clemente. and the movement itself got started in California, but today it's really a national issue. We do support educating the public, educating legislators, and educating the fire service on the implications of this program.
Well, that's what we're trying to get here today. I think that there's a lot of myths that we want to try to break here today as we talk about sprinklers. Ted?
Clarification on the International Residential Code, Chief. Could you give us an idea? That is not just about sprinklers. That's about all the codes that pertain to primary residence. Is that correct?
That is correct. The residential code is a code that's devoted to the dwelling occupancy. And as you probably, maybe you don't know, but it's part of a family of codes. The International Code Council, which is a major organization that resulted from the combination of the three major code groups starting about 10 years ago, puts out a series of codes. One's called the IPC, the International Plumbing Code, and there's the IBC, which is the International Building Code, and one of the family of codes is called the Residential Code.
Okay, so the UPC, I was a plumbing contractor for many years, and in California, right, in many areas, we used the Uniform Plumbing Code. Now, that is a little different code than the IPC, is that correct?
That's correct.
I see, okay.
Well, how do these sprinkler systems actually work in the residential environment? Let's get kind of into the nuts and bolts of what these things are. How do they work?
Well, as I explained before, the components consist of sprinkler heads, which are mechanical devices that are installed according to a schedule in the ceiling, and they're supplied with a water piping system. Some of the piping systems are totally independent and serve only to serve the sprinklers, and others of these systems actually are connected to the plumbing in the house. And the way they're designed to function is that sprinkler system is set there with water pressure behind the sprinkler head, so that if there's a fire, and once there is a fire, it starts producing heat and starts putting energy into the room. It reaches a point where a solder link or some type of mechanical device will function and discharge water right at the base of the fire.
Now, I'm looking at your CD that your folks put out, Home Fire Sprinklers, A Solution to America's Fire Problem. Mm-hmm. And there's a great video clip in here about how a fire starts in a corner of a room and how quickly that thing goes up to the ceiling and starts flashing over. Can you elaborate on a little bit? At what point does the sprinkler actually know there's a fire in the room, and when does it trip?
Well, what causes the sprinkler system to function is heat, and heat only. Sprinklers don't go off just because there's smoke in a room. There has to be a certain amount of discharge of heat coming into that room. The scenario that you're talking about is what we refer to as the typical dwelling scenario, where a fire starts, or like in a trash basket or next to a couch or next to a bed. And when it reaches a certain threshold, and the reason I say certain thresholds, there's different ratings for different kinds of sprinkler heads, but the average temperature that discharges a sprinkler head today is about 165 degrees. Once it gets that hot at the ceiling, and that head will start to mechanically function, and it'll extinguish the fire.
So does the fire only engage one sprinkler head at a time, or does the whole room go off when one of the sprinkler heads is activated?
Each head activates independent of the other heads in proportion to its exposure to heat.
Okay.
I have a one classic example. We had an individual who decided she was fairly upset with her boyfriend, so she firebombed his apartment. And
fairly upset.
Yeah, she was reasonably upset.
That never happened here in Santa Barbara.
I would certainly hope not. But she firebombed the apartment, and it discharged three heads because there was a massive amount of fire in a short period of time. But generally speaking, the way these things function is they usually never go over more than the two to three head configuration that's in a single room.
Interesting. Excellent. We need to come back and talk about it, because that's one of the great myths that are out there that we want to dispel. Visiting today with former State Fire Marshal Ron Coleman. He's with the International Residential Code Fire Sprinkler Coalition. Website of the day, www.ircfiresprinkler.org. That's www.ircfiresprinkler.org. We're live today. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan working the board. This is Community Alert, not if but when. Positive preparation for disaster on KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press radio, and on the internet at newspress.com. We'll be back in just a minute.
Welcome back, folks, to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams, and we're visiting today with Chief Ron Coleman, retired state fire marshal, and he's with the International Residential Code Fire Sprinkler Coalition.
Thank you, Ted. I want to get the website out again. There's a lot of very good information at this website. It's www.ircfiresprinkler.org. That's www.ircfiresprinkler.org. And, Chief, is this video available to download, or does it have to actually get mailed out?
It's available in both ways. You can download it directly from the site. We've distributed approximately 10,000 copies of this DVD since its production. So we also make copies available for groups of people who would like to distribute it.
Well, I've got a bunch of them we've been handing out up here. And for those who don't know anything about fire sprinklers, this is the video to watch. It's very easy to go. It's not an educational thing that you would see in a university. It's geared for the public.
Well, it's a good idea because fire sprinklers are going to be used more and more, especially in areas such as ours where we have so many fires. I think the city of Santa Barbara has brought fire sprinklers under mandate, and I think probably other fire.
Well, certainly in new construction,
suit.
We're going
to
see this. Right. So let's get back to the areas of myths. What are some of the major myths that you see, Chief, that need to be dispelled?
Well, that's kind of interesting that you asked that question because these same myths have been around about 50 years. Mm-hmm. You would think that with modern information exchange that these myths would go away, but they're being perpetuated mostly by people who don't understand. I'll give you an example. One of them is the fact, and you kind of alluded to it earlier, that when a fire occurs, all the sprinklers activate at the same time. That's simply not true. They activate on the basis of the exposure to heat, and if only one head's needed, one head goes off. Yeah. If three heads are needed, then three heads will go off. But they don't all go off at the same time. Some of that's been perpetuated by television shows and so forth that have, you know, I remember one on MacGyver one time where he set off one head and all the heads went off at the same time. That's just not true. There's another myth about the fact that sprinklers are prone to leakage and creating mold in a home. And I would submit that in plumbing in all houses, there's always the opportunity for a leak to occur for any number of reasons in your plumbing. But sprinkler systems are highly engineered devices, and they probably have less of a possibility of breaking or rupturing than any other form of plumbing appliances in a house. A sprinkler head goes through extremely severe tests, much more than, say, a valve underneath your sink would go through. There's also a myth that that when you put sprinklers in a home, that causes you problems with your water system, with the public water system, and that's also not true. We've managed to install tens of thousands of these things and connect them to domestic water systems, and we even have the ability to connect these things up to wells, and they've been known to work in a rural setting also. So when people start perpetuating the myths, that's one of the reasons we put out the DVD, is so people could get the truth.
What's interesting that people are concerned about leaking, because you got a plumbing system in your house already anyway, and nobody seems to worry about that leaking. This is the same thing. But it's curious to me, because the greatest potential for a leak in your house is probably that flex tube that goes to the water on your toilet, which tends to blow off, and that's what ends up flooding a lot of folks' homes. Not the sprinkler heads that are overhead in the living room and in the kitchen.
Right.
I do know that there's some prevention things that folks should be taking into consideration. Construction or working in and around sprinkler heads, you need to be aware that you have them overhead.
All right.
You bump those the wrong way, you will trip the sprinkler and make whoever you're working for upset. ladders and walking down hallways and corridors with heavy equipment, things on dollies. I'm thinking that the hospitals, for example, you see that. Very easy to clip one of these things.
Well, most often now, they're recessed or flush with this, so it's
right.
difficult to actually catch one. If you're in an industrial area, you might do it, I think, but maybe Ron's got
I spend. Go ahead, Chief.
I was just saying, in actuality, I'm glad you mentioned about the recess, because sprinkler heads are becoming more and more architecturally incorporated in residential settings where they are recessed and almost virtually impossible to notice easily. The scenario you were talking about, people hitting them with skip loaders and things of that nature, that probably is more of a manufacturing or industrial type
right,
of scenario.
Right, correct. So, now, you talked about the rural application, and I know here in Santa Barbara that's a question that's come up a couple times. Now, for example, there's a house in Rosario Park that's fully sprinklered, and
right.
it goes to an outdoor tank, 10,000 gallons, and there's a pump and what have you. That's really kind of where it gets to be a little bit more complicated, isn't it?
Well, it's not unlike any other fire problem. Connect a structure from the urbanized aspects of having readily available water supply and all the and access and so forth. It requires some additional engineering solutions, but we've been very successful throughout the United States in being able to come up with alternatives to an articulated water system. Some of them are stored pressure tanks. Some of them have air over water. Some of them have pumps on them. But there's a relatively simple set of options to take care of rural water supply.
One of the simplest I think I've worked with in the construction industry is just having an elevated water supply that doesn't have any mechanical things to it at all. You have a tank, you pump the water up the tank, it sits up there, something happens, there's enough pressure there to activate the system, and so you don't have to worry about electricity or anything like that.
That's right. That works very well.
One of our avid listeners works over at Merle Lynch in Santa Barbara, and he asked me to ask you about cost. It was an issue of cost, and his immediate response when we heard that we were going to do a show on sprinklers was, oh, that stuff is so expensive, and you know, that just drives up the cost on remodel or rebuilding a house. Is that really true?
Well, you know, let's put it this way. Everything has a cost factor, one of my standing jokes is that sometimes when people talk about this sort of thing, they talk about cost as if it's a limiting factor, when in fact the cost of putting in a sprinkler system is probably less than 0.5% of the construction cost of a home. It's not uncommon for people to upgrade their carpet or upgrade their tile or put in, you know, special features that drive the cost of that home up thousands of dollars. The name of the game with residential sprinklers is to put them in during initial construction and to have a qualified contractor who is familiar with the residential market. And sometimes it amounts to maybe as much as $1.25 a square foot. I don't think that's an unreasonable expenditure for having the quality of life and the peace of mind that your home is never going to burn down around your ears.
Well, certainly if we were to go and interview people that have lost their homes here in Santa Barbara over the last couple of years, I think most of them would probably advocate that you don't want to go through that experience, and therefore it would seem anything you can do to prevent that from happening is a good thing. Now, I guess that introduces the question about wildfires, which is an external fire coming at your house. What is the sprinkler system available to do at that case?
Well, a lot depends on the design of the system and the amount of defensible space around the home and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you, in fact, I have personal knowledge of homes in the Santa Barbara area that were exposed to wildland fires that, because they were sprinklered, are still standing.
Mm-hmm.
They activate maybe one head next to a window that was broken by a flame or whatever. One of the variables with that, and be real candid with you, has to do with whether or not there is adequate protection for the attic spaces. If the fire doesn't get into the attic, it's not going to take a sprinkler system. If it does get into the attic, unless it's adequately protected, you could have a problem. But residential sprinklers are not designed initially to protect a house from a wildland fire.
How about sprinkling areas such as the attic and under the underfloor areas? Do they do sprinkler work in there? I know because we've got the amber loading problem, and people are talking a great deal about that.
In my own case, in the case where I was the fire chief of a local government that had sprinklers, we did have a requirement that certain attic spaces had to be required if they were above a certain height.
Mm-hmm.
That is a lot of that depends upon the body of information that the local fire department uses in setting their standard.
Is that the discretion of the builder or of the homeowner, or is that more a constraint of the actual materials involved?
Generally speaking, that's a decision made during the plan checking process.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, we're up to our next break here. Sorry to interrupt. Visiting today with former State Fire Marshal Ron Coleman. He's the spokesman for the International Residential Code, IRC, Fire Sprinkler Coalition. Today's website, ircfiresprinkler.org. That's ircfiresprinkler.org. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan working the board. This is KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio and newspress.com on the Internet. Community alert, not if but when, positive preparation for disaster. We'll be back after these announcements.
Welcome back, folks, to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams, and we're visiting today with Chief Ron Coleman. He's a former and retired state fire marshal, and he's working with the International Residential Code for Fire Sprinkler Coalition. And, Mike, you got something there?
Well, a couple of things here. Again, the website of the day, and we encourage you to take some time to look at this, is ircfiresprinkler.org. That's ircfiresprinkler.org. Also want to plug in here for Firehouse World Fire Rescue EMS Conference. It's going to be on February 28th through March 4th, 2010, San Diego Convention Center. The exhibit hall is open to the public. Anything you want to see in the way of fire equipment, apparatus, tools, training materials, just about anything you can imagine is at this conference. Tuesday, March 2nd, 11 to 5. Wednesday, March 3rd, 11 to 5. Thursday, March 4th, 10 to 3. And there will also an opening keynote speaker and what have you on March 2nd. We'll have a little bit more about this next week when Kevin Knight is on with CSFA. But, again, that's going to be February 28th through March 4th, San Diego Convention Center. And if you have any interest in this stuff at all, I encourage you to go down and take a look at that show.
Good.
So, Ted, jump back in. Yet another question.
Yes, Chief, I wanted to just kind of go over with you something we mentioned earlier on the program, and that is the exterior sprinklers. I know that people are thinking a lot about exterior sprinklers here in this area because of the wildland fire, and but there are some good things and bad things about them. If we high wind, it blows the water away, et cetera, et cetera. But I was just wondering if you can tie your interior sprinkler system to your exterior system and whether you advise how you advise about that.
Okay, well, that's somewhat of a tricky question, and I'll tell you why. The residential fire sprinkler movement is based upon the simple premise that we're trying to protect the life and property of people who are living on the inside of a building that's occupied at the time the fire actually occurs.
Mm-hmm.
The standard it's based on is called NFPA 13D, and one we use in apartment complexes is called NFPA 13R. Neither of those sprinkler standards are designed to take care of an exterior exposure fire.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I personally have witnessed numerous attempts over my 40-some-odd years in the fire service for people to devise exterior fire sprinkler systems, and I've seen varying degrees of success of how they actually function. Currently, this discussion that we have about residential fire sprinklers is not aimed at marrying those two concepts up.
Okay.
We are not necessarily saying that it's not altogether appropriate to try in certain urban wildland interface places, but the codes that we're working on and the standards that we're working on are primarily designed to save the lives and property of the occupants. Now, having said that, I will tell you that I've been observing and watching the development of things such as misting technology and some high-pressure systems that are trying to develop different approaches to exterior, we call it exposure protection,
mm-hmm.
And my personal belief is that there is going to be a technological breakthrough on that at some point in the future.
But that most likely would be a separate system rather than an ancillary system.
I suspect it's going to be linked to a different set of parameters from the outside of the house. And a lot of it relates to the defensible space and what I call protection of intrusion points in a house.
Mm-hmm.
When a fire assaults a building, if that building is hardened appropriately, the fire has a tough time getting in.
Hardened means that they've got covered eaves, and there's certain aspects of the building that are preparing for the kind of fire you can expect.
Exactly. Having fire-resistant material on your badly exposed sides, making sure that there's no openings in which brands can aspirate into the building and things of that nature. But that's a different world in many ways.
Okay.
Well, when I was getting ready for the show here, I pulled up firechief.com, another website folks should take some time to look at, and there was an interesting paragraph in here regarding sprinklers. In the past 30 years, more than 100,000 Americans have lost their lives in residential fires. Although smoke alarms have significantly improved home fire safety in recent years, fire safety experts are actively promoting the combination of residential sprinkler systems and smoke alarms in the basic fire protection package for new homes. And then we add to that defensible space. And I mean, we keep coming back to the same thing. Defensible space, make your house be able to defend itself.
Well, the little known secret here is that the home fire is America's fire protection embarrassment.
Mm-hmm.
In spite of the fact that we have been very, very successful in eliminating, for the most part anyway, eliminating catastrophic type fires that we experienced in the 1900s and the 1950s and, you know, et cetera, the single family dwelling still is the most vulnerable environment for a family. Yeah, we lose about 3,000 to 3,500 people per year in fires in homes, or fires in general.
Mm-hmm.
There are not 100% of those are homes, because you have people who are unfortunately victims of fire from automobile accidents and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that if you get up in the morning and go to work, chances are you go to work in a building that's sprinklered. If you go at night to go out to a movie theater or for some source of entertainment, you're likely to be in a place that's fully sprinklered. But when you go home to, you know, snuggle down for the night, you're in an occupancy that has limited fire protection.
Mm. I asked a local fire marshal here some time ago about what is the primary purpose of a residential sprinkler system, and his response was to create a safe environment so that you can get out of the house, that it's secondary for extinguishing the fire. Is that your feeling on that also?
I agree with him 100%. The residential sprinkler system concept is based on the first 15 minutes of a fire.
Mm-hmm.
It's not based on the fact that you can be all things to all people.
Okay, so we let's use a hotel, for example, because there's most hotels now are sprinklers, certainly not all of them, but most of them. And you're in a hotel-type environment, the fire alarm goes off, and you get out, and then you suddenly realize that, in fact, a fire's there. Now, those are complex sprinkler systems, but they're ones that potentially impact everybody that's listening to this show, because that's a place that we go. What happens when the fire department gets there? How does the sprinkler system interact with the fire department?
Well, in an organization that has got their act together, and I'm going to be real blunt and say that there are some fire departments that have not contemplated these kinds of policies even today. But the majority of the fire service, the way they respond to a sprinkler system is consider it to be holding the fire in check until the fire suppression forces can get there and make sure that fire is dead out. And included in that category in commercial systems, I'm going to be real specific right now, because in a commercial system, it's very important that the fire department have pre-fire planned that occupancy to know where the connections are, where the water supply is, and so forth, so that when they first arrive on the scene, they can connect up to what we call an FDC, or fire department connection, and provide additional water supply, additional pressure specifically. Then they usually do not turn off that sprinkler system until somebody gets in there and gets to the root of where the fire is, gets underneath that sprinkler head, and says this fire is under control. Now, the subtle difference there is in a single-family dwelling residential sprinkler system, there is no FDC. There's no connection to the fire department. Therefore, the fire department, when they respond to a dwelling fire involving sprinklers, their number one priority is to get to the base of the fire, to find out where it is, and put a stopper in it, shut the water off long enough to be able to determine where the fire is, and then extinguish the rest of it.
Very good. Well, you know, Santa Barbara County Fire just had a save here last week on a gentleman that was asleep in his house as the fire was downstairs, and they got up there doing their interior search and found this guy and was able to get him out. Sprinkler system certainly would have suppressed the fire more than it was there before the fire department arrived, and would have certainly saved this guy's life. As it is, the fire department was able to do it for him. But
he was fortunate.
But this stuff does happen here in Santa Barbara. Mm-hmm. This is not something we're fishing for topics for the show.
It happens everywhere.
Yeah. So we're visiting today with Chief Ron Coleman. He's former California State Fire Marshal and now the spokesman for the International Residential Code, IRC Group. That's Fire Sprinkler Coalition. Website of the week, IRCFiresprinkler.org. That's IRCFiresprinkler.org. If you have any questions about today's show, give us a call at the WRA at 964-7194. 964-7194, or shoot us an email at it's community@wildlandresidents.org. We'll be happy to get the information to you. This is Community Alert, not if but when, positive preparation for disaster on KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio, and also on the internet at newspress.com. I just vapor locked there for a second. This live radio, it's a challenge. Anyway, we'll be back to you in just a minute after these announcements.
Welcome back, folks, to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams, and we're visiting today with Chief Ron Coleman, retired state fire marshal, and with the International Residential Code Fire Sprinkler Coalition. And, Chief, we were talking about activation and deactivation. I wanted to have you make a point here that it's up to the fire department to shut off the sprinkler system, as I understand. Is that correct?
That's correct. A sprinkler system should be kept in an active status whenever it's protecting anything. And the way the systems are normally designed and incorporating, there are different kinds of ways that they are installed, depending on whether they're a standalone system or whether they're attached to the plumbing system. Nobody but the fire department should be the ones to turn them off.
Even if they're activated and the house owner feels that the fire is out, they should actually leave the sprinkler sprinkling until the fire department arrives and puts it out.
Exactly.
Okay.
Let's get into the area of maintenance. These things are in your house. You buy this house or you've had them put in. What maintenance is required on a sprinkler system in a residential application?
Well, actually, there's very little maintenance on a system itself. You have to realize that sprinkler heads are designed to, we call them the silent sentinel. They're designed to be installed in the ceiling and stay there for 100 years if they have to. I actually have got sprinklers in my personal collection that were installed clear back in the 1880s and remained in service until the buildings were dismantled. The big issue with sprinklers, of course, is to make sure that they are not compromised by remodel or by people doing things like going in and wallpapering over the sprinkler head cover or painting the sprinkler heads so that they do not react appropriately and so forth. Generally speaking, most people who've got these systems have a little maintenance manual that's given along with the system that tells them what to do and what not to do. It is appropriate periodically to have somebody come out and take a look at your pressure on your system, because I've actually seen this occur where systems went in with one level of pressure and 6 months later they don't have that pressure left. And so there's little remedial kinds of things that should be considered. And generally, these systems require very minimal amount of activity by the homeowner.
Are these systems are they getting better? In other words, are the sprinkler heads able to operate under lower pressures than they have been, or is it fairly standard that you need to have 25 to 30 PSI in order to operate a system?
Well, the technology from where it was when I first started has significantly changed. I go back to, as I started to say earlier, I think I alluded to the fact I've been putting in sprinkler systems in homes since 76, but I started putting them in commercial buildings in 65.
Wow.
And in those days, we call the design density and the configuration of the sprinklers required a lot of pressure and a lot of water. They're getting to be lower and lower and lower. In fact, I'll even project for you that on the horizon is a new system that's called the misting system that has a sprinkler head that's about the size of a pencil. And it uses high-pressure water fog. Marriott Corporation uses these extensively in hotels. And I've seen them recommended and even being applied into residential applications. And those sprinkler heads are putting out, we're not measuring them now in large amounts of water. We're measuring them almost in teacups.
Interesting. But that saturates the air with water vapor, and so that it will extinguish the fire, although there's not large volumes of water actually going out of them.
Well, actually, going back to the old adage of being a firefighter, it converts water to steam.
Mm-hmm.
And when you convert water to steam, the conversion factor is huge. That's called the latent heat of vaporization. And a water mist will put out an awful lot of fire with a minimal amount of water.
And that reduces the amount of damage to the property unrelated to the fire. That's the suppression effort. The old surround and drown technology is sort of going away here.
Well, that goes along with something a little off the subject, but something that I've been I just wrote an article for the News Press about Christmas time, and one of the things that came up with chimney fires, and I was always told as a kid, because we had fires all the time I was growing up in our fireplace, that if a chimney fire started, the best thing to do is to take a glass of water and throw it on the fire, and then the steam from that goes up into the chimney and extinguishes the fire. How do you feel about that, Chief?
Sounds pretty basic to me. I would suggest that
fits right in with the mountain community.
Yeah, I would also suggest that sort of sounds like what I kind of call folklore firefighting.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea, if you get a chimney fire, of course, one of the big issues with chimneys is that they need to. You talk about maintenance. Chimneys really need to be maintained, especially with creosote buildup and things of that nature. And if a home has one and is using natural fuels, vis-a-vis logs, there should be some maintenance to make sure that doesn't occur.
Absolutely.
I'd like to go back to something you were talking about with remodels, and I know this is a big issue in the commercial world, and those that are listening today that work in commercial facilities involving remodeling of their stuff need to think about this. If you have a sprinklered commercial facility and you're blowing out walls and you're remodeling and you're doing the things that happen all the time, you need to take into consideration your sprinkler system, because it was designed for whatever was there the first time, not what may be in there now.
Right.
And the placement of some of these heads may be actually either going to be ineffective or dangerous or those kinds of things. How much is that remodeling process when there's sprinklers, how much of that does the building department actually capture and look for? Does it just slip through the cracks?
Well, a good building department and a good fire prevention bureau are going to keep track of a couple of things about a sprinkler system. One is this design occupancy. In other words, if it's designed for a light hazard and then you want to put an extra hazard in there, you better do some changes. That's what plan checking is all about.
Mm-hmm.
And a good plan checker will pick up on those kinds of things right away.
Well, I know that in some of the jurisdictions here in Santa Barbara, the fire departments are very actively involved in the plans checks. I know down in Montecito and Carp Summerlin, for sure, they definitely are checking for that kind of stuff. Ted?
Do you have an idea of how much water? It sounds to me, from what we've been talking about, that we're not dealing with a large volume of water here when we're looking at sprinkler systems, because, as you're saying, that you have the amount of sprinkler heads are activated according to where the fire is in the house, so that you're not really looking at a tremendous amount of water storage. Is that correct?
That's true. In the 13D specifications for rural fire, the tank is not more than a couple hundred gallons.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Interesting. You mentioned you had sprinkler heads go all the way back to the 1800s, and it strikes me as curious is that if sprinklers were designed that early in, we're going all the way back to the beginning stages of the fire service and the insurance industry, where did they go? Why is there this sudden lull where they kind of disappeared for a long time?
Oh, they never disappeared. To the contrary, the fact is the sprinkler system has been an essential part of the total fire protection delivery system for well over 100 years. I have some of the original textbooks that were written by Grinnell and his compatriots when they first started doing sprinklers in the 1870s. They were primarily brought into use initially because of textile fires on the East Coast. I also have an ad that I got from Saturday Evening Post from the year 1923 in which they were putting sprinkler systems in homes in the East Coast.
Interesting.
It's just that the technology and the understanding of the technology and the advocacy of its use has undergone almost a renaissance over about the last 30 years. If you really want to know where this came from, I trace it all the way back to America Burning, which was published in 1973. And in America Burning, there is a statement. I'm not going to quote it exactly because I don't have it in front of me right this moment, but something to the effect of, if we could solve the fire problem in textile manufacturing and major industry using a simple technology like a fire sprinkler, why aren't we putting it to use in solving America's residential fire problem?
And with that, we're going to take our quick break here before Richard seizes. This is KZSB AM 1290, your community alert. Not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster. We'll be back in just a minute.
Welcome back, folks, to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williamson. We're visiting today with Chief Ron Coleman, who's a retired state fire marshal for the state of California and International Residential Code Fire Sprinkler Coalition member. And, Mike, you got some.
Well, I'd like to let folks know that if you're interested in sprinkler history or if you want to know what this is really all about, there's a great publication that Chief Coleman wrote back when he was the fire chief with San Clemente, Alpha to Omega, The Evolution of the Residential Fire Protection. And it is available at the website www.ircfiresprinkler.org. And I'm going to try to get this up on the WRA website folks locally can do it. It is a little long. It's 100 and some pages long. But anything and everything you want to know about the residential sprinklers and case studies that support it and how it worked and the evolution of what didn't work and how it got fixed and all of that,
it's
all in there.
I think people that are being contemplating having fire sprinklers or being mandated to have fire sprinklers would be looking for something just like this to get knowledgeable.
And another thing that you can get a hold of, I actually got this one off the book depository, but the chief wrote Residential Sprinkler Systems Protecting Life and Property. It's a hardback book. Actually, you've written quite a few textbooks. But for people that want to talk knowledgeably about the sprinkler systems, and I think there's some folks here that probably would be wise to take a pause and do some reading before they continue, there's both of these publications. Is there any other recommendations that you have, Chief?
Well, we already talked about downloading the DVD. I'd recommend that. That's one of the quickest ways to get up to speed.
Absolutely.
Great.
So, in any event, any closing thoughts that you have before we close out here? I know you're heading on down to Riverside, and I'll be seeing you tomorrow morning at the Rural Fire Caucus.
No, I just kind of like to remind all of our listeners out there, you made a comment earlier about some guy didn't want a sprinkler system put in his house. And he's upset about the fact that it's there. But, you know, I've never, ever gone to the scene of a fire in a sprinklered occupancy where the occupants haven't been so grateful it's unbelievable. And one of the mottos I used to use in San Clemente is residential sprinklers mean never having to say I'm sorry. the issue is that the paradigm is changing. America's fire problem is changing. We can no longer stand back and say that we can ignore the fact that this kind of technology can make a significant difference in the quality of life here in America. And while the code continues to develop, the technology continues to evolve, and more and more fire service personnel are signing on to the coalition. We started off our original meeting we could have held in a telephone booth. Our last one we had 50 people at.
Well, we could certainly point out, too, that the fire service is starting to go through some major economic challenges, and the type of responses that some folks are going to get throughout the country is definitely going to start to change. I wrote in one of my news press articles, the day of a fire truck in every driveway is over.
Absolutely.
And the sprinkler systems are certainly a way to offset that.
I did the addition once, and there's more houses in California than there are fire trucks.
Yeah, by a couple.
And the people to run them. Well, thank you very much, Chief. I appreciate your time. We are out of time. We've been visiting today with former State Fire Marshal Ron Coleman, spokesman for the International Residential Code, IRC Fire Sprinkler Coalition. Website for additional information, IRCFireSprinkler.org. That's IRCFireSprinkler.org. It's Ted Adams, Mike Williams, and the ever-diligent Richard Dugan working the board. KZSB AM 1290, your community alert, not if but when, positive preparation for disaster. See you next week with Kevin Knighta.
This has been Community Alert, produced by the Wildland Residents Association, San Marcos Pass Volunteer Fire Department, in association with the Santa Barbara County Fire Safe Council. Community Alert is proud to be part of the Orpala Fund Initiative, Aware and Prepare, a community partnership to strengthen emergency and disaster readiness. If you would like to help support the program, you may send your tax-deductible donations to the Wildland Residents Association, 5655 West Camino Cielo, Santa Barbara, California, 93105. That's the Wildland Residents Association, 5655 West Camino Cielo, Santa Barbara, California, 93105. Comments regarding this Community Alert program may be sent online to community@wildlandresidents.org. That's community@wildlandresidents.org. Or you may call 964-7194. That's 964-7194. Production assistance for Community Alert is provided by Richard Dugan and Jim Williams. Community Alert, not if, but when disaster strikes.